You don't get to use the cultural markers of existing people as a way to connote alien identity. Hello, and welcome to the Feminist Frequency Radio Star Trek podcast, all about Star Trek Picard. I'm retired Rear Admiral Ebony Adams, and joining me at my French vineyard of relaxation is my favorite unactivated synthetic, Anita Sarkeesian. Hey!
Greetings, human.
You know what? If you're going to try and pass for human, you're going to work a little harder than
I
Anita.
Know. I really do.
That was barely making it. I'm excited to be here. We have spent the past two seasons and, whew, boy, uncounted brain time, laughing, yelling, giving hair reports, which I know the people count on, about Star Trek Discovery. I personally am excited to spend the next couple of months arguing about Picard. This latest entry in the Star Trek franchise warps onto our screen 25 years after Next Generation left. I hadn't realized it had been that long, maybe because I rewatch Next Generation all the way through, like, every 6 months. So Picard is set 14 years after the retirement of iconic Enterprise captain and beloved husband of Ian McKellen, Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
This show promises to answer all of the questions that fans have been dying to ask. Like, does Jean-Luc still drink Earl Grey tea? Hot. That's basically the only question I had, and I got it answered. Anita, I know that this is fresh in your mind because you were WhatsApping me as you dived into it. Please give us a quick breakdown of what happened.
Yeah, I will. Right before that, though, I just want to let y'all know that we are really excited to host 5 episodes of our podcast covering the whole 10 episodes of Picard, and we're going to have some awesome guests on this season.
Oh, I can't wait.
Definitely, you know, if you're tuning in for the first time, definitely subscribe to our feed to be able to get all of that good stuff.
Good shout out.
Yeah. So, okay. Wow, this episode. So really, I want to try to just briefly hit the main points so that we can dive into what actually happened. We start with learning that that Jean-Luc Picard is an admiral and that he is retired on his beautiful vineyard in France. And he is about to do an interview, and we get a lot of backstory about why he's retired, why he left Starfleet in this moment. In the Boston area, we meet this woman, Daj. She might be a synthetic. Her and Jean-Luc end up realizing what is actually happening and uncover this larger sort of conspiracy. And that's kind of the crux of this episode, is the two of them connecting and realizing that there's a big story happening here.
Yeah.
I mean, we should dive into the specifics of it, but I think that's the general. I'm going to just say, y'all, I've had 3 hours of sleep.
I was going
to
say,
so I'm trying really hard to be coherent, and I'm so fucking excited to talk about this. But I'm, in case we have any new listeners.
You're doing a great job, Anita.
Yeah, I am in case we have any new listeners, I just want to warn y'all. This is usually
it doesn't get any better. If we have any new listeners, old listeners will tell you it is going to be this off the rails throughout the episode. But maybe by the time Discovery rolls around, we'll have finally figured our shit out. I doubt it, though.
Nah, I doubt it. All right, so here's the thing. I watched this episode on an aeroplane in the sky.
And an aeroplane
in the sky. And I like, you know how airplanes like heighten emotions and like you cry more on planes and all of that shit. I was so elated. I was grinning so hard when it started that my face hurt. Like I was here for it. And I was actually kind of glad that I was on an airplane where everyone had headphones on, because I was literally talking to the screen. Like I was yelping, I was exclaiming. Like when shit happened, I was like, "Oh no!" Like I was.
Oh,
it was
my God.
I was the ultimate nerd in that moment, and I owned every second of it. I'm telling you, Ebony, that first scene where it's Picard and Data and they're playing a game, I was grinning. I was grinning so hard, Ebony. I just this show starts. Everything about this first episode is the opposite of Discovery. And it kind of retroactively made me mad how bad Discovery was, because they can clearly make something new and interesting and fresh with a universe that we love and care about.
Yeah, although I have to say, I wonder if my initial reactions to Discovery would have been completely different if we had gotten Picard first, because I think that Picard is doing something very interesting, and it's clearly trying to tackle like big issues in the way that Discovery is. I think from the way the kind of framing is laid out in this first episode that it's going to be, you know, more sure-footed and, you know, like kind of a smarter articulation of those issues than Discovery, at least initially. But I do think Picard, like what we're getting set up for is in many ways like kind of the, hey, we're not fucking around here, folks. Like Starfleet, you know, maybe isn't the shiny, happy people that you thought they were. Maybe there's some bad actors. Maybe the whole thing needs to be interrogated. And so I wonder if I would have been more gracious to Discovery if we had been set up for that with Picard. But yeah, whatever, that's not what we got.
Well, what I was wondering, and the conclusion I came to, because I was trying to be generous here and be like, well, you know, we're seeing familiar. Sorry?
I said, that's not your role. Your role is not to be generous.
I know, but I'm so excited about this show.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, of course we're going to have warm and fuzzy feelings about Picard and like the references to, you know, seeing Data, the references to TNG, which is, you know, yours and I's common ground in the Star Trek universe. And I was like, of course there's going to be warm and fuzzy. But after the episode finished, I also went back and thought about it. And I was like, it was just a much more solid story. It was delivered better. The story is a better concept. The engagement with the character, like everything about it felt like it felt a lot more natural. Whereas Discovery was just fucking batshit banana soup. Like, it was so stupid. Yeah. And it didn't need to be. But anyways, it's really hard not to compare them. But I don't think that they are compare. Like, I don't think they're comparable necessarily or that they should be treated as comparable.
I think that, you know, like I said, I'm excited to think through what the Star Trek universe can be, wherein both of these series exist and what the kind of implications are. And I do love that I'm asking these kind of in-depth questions, which is not to say that, you know, I sat in front of the screen watching, you know, Next Generation or Deep Space Nine and was just like, you know, shoving Cheetos in my face and deactivating my brain. But I do think these series, both of them, like I said, are trying for big things. I don't think we're going to get a lot of the like throwaway kind of episodes that we used to get with older versions of Star Trek, simply because we don't have the time and it will be like, you know, it'll be like unnecessary momentum stopping to have like these kind of one-off, you know, just like the crew goes to Risa moments, which listen, those are favorites of mine, but still I think like there's more action, you know, there's more like, you know, moral shades of gray clearly happening here, but like, let's get into it.
Yeah. Well, and also that's made very clear by the fact that the first episode, like it has a lot of exposition, and I think that they they do a decent job knowing that they're like, this is going to be an exposition episode. Like, to me, it feels like they're like, we made this creative choice to just throw everything at you as interestingly as we can, because we want to get the fuck into this story, right? Like, it hit the ground running, and there's not going to be filler episodes. It's going to be pure, like, main plot story, and I'm here for that. I'm really excited about that. So,
me too. Like, I was wondering, because, I mean, Patrick Stewart, God bless him. What is he, 79?
How is he doing this?
Well, listen.
I'm in my late 30s and I'm too tired to record a podcast.
And as an 87-year-old, I was happy to see someone of my generation on screen. But like, we knew from the trailers that this was going to be an action-heavy series, right? So I was like, okay, I hope they don't do something like, you know, what they did with Harrison Ford in the last Indiana Jones movie, where it just, you're like, no. Like, this older man, don't disrespect him by making him, like, you know, I don't know, fight these battles or whatever. But it still looks like, even though this is going to be an action-heavy show, Picard is going to be playing the role he played on Next Generation, which is like the person who strategizes and thinks and does like the heavy lifting in that way, he is in many ways going to be the conscience of this show. And I like how the show sets it up. So like he attempted to be, or rather he was kind of, you know, demonstrating that Starfleet had lost its way and didn't have a conscience. Like, well, I mean, talk about the dude, like Starfleet was his life. And he retires because these conservative reactionary voices don't acknowledge like the sanctity of life. That's a weird phrase, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but like
the dude quit his
job.
Like that's who he is. And he was like, no, this thing that has been my life, y'all, I refuse to be part of this. I refuse to passively accept it. Jean-Luc Picard, 2020, y'all.
Well, so that's the thing is that, you know, they're... I love that they are holding so true to the spirit of Picard that like that he lives and dies and breathes in whatever his ethic, and that even giving up the thing that is probably most precious to him, which was extremely difficult, is a thing that he's willing to do because he's such a fucking good human, right? And so as the story gets uncovered, right, we're like, okay, he's at this farm or he's at this ranch and he's a little cranky about it. And there's these two Romulans that are hanging out in like a kind of servant role, but like,
yeah,
not,
I do want to talk about
unclear.
That.
Yeah, for sure. But then we, you know, I thought it was creative. They did an interview with a journalist, to do a lot of the exposition of the background. And I thought it was actually a really nice way because it showed the emotional range of what this actually meant. And depth to the universe in terms of like journalists are shitty and year, whatever as they are in our time. So like I was kind of freaking out. A supernova is moving towards the Romulan homeworld and was going to literally destroy basically the entire Romulan population and everybody there. And so they're moving them all to Mars, and synthetics hacked into a system and destroyed Mars and killed everyone. So the supernova was going to kill everyone, but instead the synthetics did, and the world turned into this deeply reactionary space of like synthetics are all evil and must all be banned. And you're just like, holy shit. Like that's
a lot of shit happens.
You know, like that is a Star Trek complexity that I am fucking here for.
Yeah. Yeah. So the fact that they're called synthetics in this series, right? And like I made a joke earlier about Blade Runner and whatever. Yeah. There are shades of that there. But yeah, so we come from, you know, the Next Generation, where Lieutenant Commander Data is a valuable and beloved member of crew. And in fact, we have several episodes in which like the nature of his existence is affirmed, you know, not despite his difference, but through his difference. To have that kind of dismissed, to have him labeled, like the insistence upon labeling creatures, beings like Data as synthetics, right? You know, you're like, how did we get from Lieutenant Commander Data being a hero of the Federation to synthetic entities being outright banned? In whatever period of time, 14 years since, you know, it kind of mirrors what's happening, huh, in the world today, where you're like, okay,
what?
We were by no means perfect, but we have gone backwards with a quickness at warp 9 with questions that many of us thought had been settled, you know, in terms of like social justice issues. And I just thought that was like a bold stance to take. And I'm eager to see how Picard, the show, kind of works its way through. I mean, I think like Lieutenant Commander Data is gone, but we've got Dodge, or we had Dodge. Now we've got, is it Soji, her twin sister?
Yeah, Soji Asha, I think.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm eager to see how we work through this.
Which, what the fuck? Well, okay, so we meet her, and she is sitting in her house with her boyfriend and talking about how she just got, talking about how she's smart as fuck and just got into a really good school. And you're just like, I'm here for this. This is great. Yep. And then the boyfriend gets murdered, and I was like, wait. The first dude who died, the first person who dies is black. Are you serious? What is what just happened? Why? What? Like, yeah, he's an alien, but come on.
Like, is he an alien though? I mean, we'll come back to this in the hair report, but there are a couple of things about like Star Trek's, you know, demarcation of difference. It's like, this just looks like a person of color. You know, from
with
a non-Western,
so,
right? So, like, okay.
You can't take the Star Trek out of Star Trek, Ebony. Come on.
I can and will.
Yeah. Well, so one, that was a troubling thing that I was like, come on. But you see that she, like, they come in and they're like, before she activates, and you're like, oh, she's a fucking synthetic for sure. And she, like, just destroys them. And, you know, this is very tropey. Like, she didn't know that she had all these latent powers, and now she's, like, amazing and super skilled and whatever. But I don't care. I'm so here for it. Like, it...
Oh, yeah, and it was amazingly shot. It looked like it was a... Like just
those
amazing
action scenes,
kind of sequence.
The action sequences I actually really enjoyed. There's a scene later on where her and Picard are running away from the agents that have found them at Starfleet headquarters. And she literally, she fucking flies. Like, I screamed on the airplane being like, she just flew. I really liked those moments, like, you know, I liked those action sequences. I thought they were done really well. And there weren't too many of them. Like, it was enough to keep everything moving and going. And so I enjoyed, I enjoyed that little bit of it.
Hi, folks. Carolyn here. Hope you're enjoying the return of Feminist Frequency's Star Trek podcast. Consider beaming yourself over to patreon.com/femfreak and joining our podcast community. We'll have the replicator whip up a cup of Earl Grey for you.
Yeah, what did you think about, like, the look of the show? So, this looks, the visual style of this show is very much of a piece with other science fiction visual media that we're getting today. So, The Expanse, Battlestar Galactica, which granted is, you know, 10, 15 years old now, but I'm saying it doesn't look like a 90s show, even though we are, you know, it's taking up the story of people that we knew from the late 80s and 90s. Nor does it look like DS9 or Enterprise or whatever. It looks, how did it feel to be back in Star Trek universe?
Aesthetically, I think it's fairly distinct, right? It feels very much in line with, like, how we expect, you know, these types of shows to look today. They clearly have a budget for the show. It feels enough like Star Trek to me in terms of the familiarity of characters and concepts. And also what I love about it is the bigness of the idea, the tension of moral and ethical stakes. And that's what I fucking love about Star Trek, right? But I think it is so distinctly fresh and different in a way that I'm here for, right? I don't want another TNG, sorry. I want something new, right? I want to see where we can go with it, and what does it look like moving forward, and how does time change in the future? Like, the whole Star Trek is predicated on this idea of we've reached utopian society, and then what happens? And the conflict is supposed to come from external exploration, but what happens when societies ebb and flow and they go up and down and things happen? And I feel like that's what this is saying, is like, yeah, we may have had this utopian society, but now we have a shift in politic. We have a shift in who comes to power and who gets to make choices. And what does that mean for this world?
What I like is how this show in some ways indicts the optimism that we had as Star Trek fans, who were kind of like, oh yeah, at some point in the future, everything kind of gets sorted out. There's no racism. There's no sexism. There's no homophobia. You know, we have figured all of this shit out. And so we can just gallivant around the universe. Is that accurate? And, like, what is the cost of being what is essentially, like, this benevolent imperial power in the 24th century.
Yeah, and also there's a question here of, and this is kind of what I was going to get at, but like there's a question here of, is it, I am not positing this question. I'm saying that I think that the show might be doing this. Is it human nature to find prejudice?
Right.
Right? Like, is it innate in us as human beings, regardless of background, that we have to find an enemy? We have to find some kind of people to be bigoted towards, right? It, like in-group, out-group kind of stuff. And I think the show is sort of positing that, in which I think is important for the political time that we live in and what it means to have a show about politics in this time, right? So there is an enemy now, and it's the synthetics, and, you know, how is that any different than racism or sexism or homophobia or ableism, right? Like, I don't know if the show is going that deep into this, but that's the inclination, or that's what how I'm interpreting some of this.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that at the period in which the show is set, we appear to no longer be in an adversary relationship with the Romulans.
Yeah.
Who have been long-term antagonists to the Federation, right?
Yeah.
And so we open on, you know, as you say, Jean-Luc at his amazing vineyard, Chateau Picard.
Fuck yes. How do we get vacations to Chateau Picard?
This is what I'm saying. But I'm not going to lie. The fact that he had these two Romulan companions, but really servants, like caretakers, didn't really sit well with me, because I think
what was happening there?
Parallels to, you know, kind of white savior narratives is a bit too one-to-one for me on that level, such that this, it reminded me of narratives in which, like, you know, a white person comes in, you know, enacts some like heroic rescue of brown peoples, and the brown peoples, out of, you know, eternal gratitude to this white savior, then pledge their fealty and servitude, right? So I'm like, okay, I get it. Picard, I love the man. I would want to hang out at that chateau too. But the notion of these two Romulans, whose names I don't remember, and in fact, I'm not sure we got both of them. But the fact that these two Romulans are this close to Picard, there was a moment when once we discover that, like, the assassins who have been sent to kill Dodge are Romulans, I was like, oh, wait. Are those two Romulans at Chateau Picard, like, deep cover? And is it going to turn out like they've been trying to get at him or whatever? Because then I'm down for that. Like, I'm down for the double cross, even though they better not hurt my boy Picard. But
yeah, and
I don't know. That just,
I'm
like,
curious.
I'm ready to let it play out, but I'm not going to lie. Having those Romulan servants there, plus the whole notion of servants, not cool, you know.
Well, and I think they're walking a line here, which I made a note being like, who are they to him? Because clearly they were like there is definitely a saving element that comes into play here,
yeah,
for sure. But they did say something about, like, you know, they set up this interview. They did, like, publicity. They made sure that these certain topics wouldn't be addressed. And they said something about, like, keeping their jobs by booking the interview. And so I don't know if that means, like, I don't know, Picard would get money. I don't know if it means that that's part of his job. Like, that it was such a vague statement, and I didn't quite know how to interpret it in terms of who they were to him. But, like, you know, when he's outside having tea with Dodge, when she shows up for the first time, he just, like, calls their name and they appear. And you're like, cool, so you are servants? Like, yeah, I'm with you. I felt uncomfortable about that as well.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, for what is supposedly like a classless society, clearly Picard, like, is a wealthy man for whatever value of wealthy, you know, makes sense in the 24th century. The dude's got this land. He's got servants, you know, like, it's okay to reckon with that and be like, you know, it's not the same as if he went home to, like, inner city Chicago after his retirement. Like, There's something fundamentally different there. But
can we talk about how adorable it was, him speaking French?
Yes.
It was
to
so
his
cute.
Dog, number one.
Number one. Oh, I love that too.
I loved it, especially because the dog, who was adorable, is essentially like a kind of a big dumb dog. and alike.
I was William like, Riker. Is this insulting to Riker? I don't know, but I'm here for
I
it.
I loved it.
Yeah, for sure. I'll say overall as well, I want to get a little bit into Daj and the synthetics and who she is in this. But overall, I'll say this. I really enjoyed watching this episode. Some of the dialogue was really cheesy. There was definitely like Easter eggs in there. There was just bad writing. And the actors on the show are not all incredible. And so because some of the dialogue was really cheesy, the acting was poor. The delivery was poor on those because it's really hard to overcome that. So there were definitely like, this isn't like the top tier of TV that's ever been made by any stretch of the imagination. Like it's not a full through and through incredible episode, but it's so solid. Like it's solid enough. And maybe I've just been beaten down by Discovery all of these fucking years. But yeah, so I probably could have saved that for the wrap up, but that's what happens when you go to bed at 8 a.m. and wake up 3 hours later. It's fine. Uh-huh. So yeah, let's talk about the, like, we find out that Daj is actually a like composite or a reconstitution of Data. Like, so I wrote down some of the science. I don't know if any of this is real or not, but it's fractal neural cloning. And so like the memories could be reconstituted from a single positronic neuron, science, whatever. Basically it is Data's child. And what's interesting is, do you remember that there was a TNG episode where Data made a daughter?
Lol.
Yeah.
Once it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly, once we realize that Daj is synthetic, that she's going to have a relationship to Data. And then the next step is like, oh, you know, she's Data's daughter. And I was like, are they going to mention Lol? Because if they don't, I'm going to lose my shit. And of course, they don't mention Lol. So they better give Lol a shout out later in the season. But you remember in the first season of our Discovery podcast where we had someone write in to explain like the mycelium network and stuff? Can someone please, with the knowledge, write in
cloning,
and
please
tell us if any of this is just like sciencey, wyancy jibber jabber, or if there's like a solid grounding in, I don't even know, cybernetic, artificial, whatever. Clearly, they could say anything, and I believe it.
Yeah, we'll be like, we totally believe you. Please write in and tell us lies so we can just spread them. Thank you.
Oh, my God. That would be hilarious if someone just wrote in and just made up shit. Or and we were like, we write in and broadcast it.
Okay, no. Actually, what idea I love is that you write in with your wild ideas, whether you are an expert or not, and we will compile the best ones.
Oh,
I like that. Yeah.
I like that too.
So there's an interesting thing. Like, so some of the shit that I was like, oh, so she dies, but they come in pairs, and so there's a twin, and so now we're going to learn about the other one, and that's going to be the story that we follow. And so, you know, there is a question of, like, how quickly does Picard find her? How quickly do they build a relationship together? Like, is a lot of the show going to be him trying to find her? Are they going to find each other quickly, and then it's about the conspiracy? Like, you know, I think that they obviously did the twins thing to create more narrative tension and to create more conflict that can be spread out across episodes. But I had a little bit, I eye rolled a little bit on that one.
I don't know how old the actor who plays Daj / Soji is. Because I'm 87, she looked a smooth 16 to me, but I'm guessing
she's pretty young.
Early 20s, because Soji is addressed as Dr. Asha later in the episode. So she's got to, you know, be older than 18, I assume.
Well, also, if they're synthetics, I don't know the parameters of androids and synthetics in this world. So are they born as they are, and do they stay the same the whole time? So does that mean that?
Well, I mean, Data doesn't. I loved how we got like puffy android face because Brent Spiner, you know, is almost 70 years old. I actually kind of dug that.
Yeah. But so, you know, like to that effect, like Soji and Daj could be the exact same age in terms of the point of creation. But Soji, I mean, Daj maybe was inactive for a period of time, or her memory was wiped in the middle of it and she was given to a family, or, you know, blah, 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 where Soji might you know, Soji might be quote unquote active for a lot longer and have been able to go through school and medical trainings and all of that. Like, we don't know any of that data, but it does feel a little bit weird that she was a doctor all of a sudden when this other one was about to, her twin was about to just go to college.
Right. But I guess my answer to that is if you have created this synthetic life form and part of the aim is to obscure the origins of that life form such that people don't know it's synthetic but think it's a human, it does not serve your purpose to have a synthetic who looks so young but then does not age, right? So the fact that she's a doctor and looks 18 is going to immediately raise alarm bells versus if she looked 30, you know, whatever. The reason why I bring it up is because when we saw like the first couple of trailers for Picard, we saw women, more women in the universe of the show. In this first episode, we don't get a lot of that, you know, and there's a justifiable fear that it's going to be just another one of those narratives where like a beautiful young woman and an older man in a universe that's peopled with primarily men, you know, go out and kick ass and do stuff. But we're not going to get that. We know that there's going to be, like Discovery, a ton more just like dynamic, amazing, smart, funny, you know, kick-ass women in this show. And I cannot wait to meet all of them.
I agree. And also, okay, so like the coming up next piece of it, which, so I don't always watch those, but I have been for this because so we can speak about it because I don't always want to know, right? Like I don't particularly want to be spoiled for it, but I was pretty stoked about like what is coming up next on it. It looked interesting and engaging to me. And I'm telling you, I am so fucking excited about Seven of Nine. And now that I actually know what the story is, I'm even more excited. Like the insight or the way that they could use her experiences to help inform what's happening here. We don't know what she's been doing this whole time. Right. Like, I'm so, so, so excited for that. And on top of it, that pull out. So the end of the episode when we learned that the other twin is Dr. Soji Asha, and we meet her through the lens of a person named Narek, or Narek? Narek? And it's captioned a Romulan reclamation site. So, it, you know, they're studying something over there. And it pulls out, and it's a Borg ship.
Yo!
It's a fucking Borg cube. So is it a Borg cube that got destroyed in one of the movies? Is it a new thing? Why is a Borg cube a Romulan reclamation site? Did the Borg take the Rom? Like, I have so many fucking questions.
Yes. Yes, and I can't wait for the show to answer them.
Yeah, man. Oh, I just want to know. I'm so excited. Anyways, I'm legit excited. I was at a conference all weekend and I literally, this is not a weird thing to do for this conference, but I literally wrote on my badge, like, talk to me about Picard if you watched it. Like, I just, I'm like.
Yeah, that is a weird thing to do.
It's not a weird thing for this particular conference, but I'm just like, I am fucking here for this. And it's really, I'm really excited to be excited about a Star Trek again.
Me too.
What I especially would like to know, Ebony.
Yes.
Tell me about the hair.
Okay. This goes back to Dodge's boyfriend that we meet at the beginning. So when I saw him from the back and I saw his hair or the things on his head that looked like hair, I thought, oh, this is cool. This is like the clay hair adornments that certain tribes in Namibia have, right? And I was like, this is awesome because so often, all too often, the visual language of our science fiction media is so aggressively white and Western. It's like everyone outside of the US, Canada, and England has ceased to exist. So I was like, yo, Dodge is dating, you know, an African man, and I'm here for it. And I love, like, this visual acknowledgement that, like, these other cultures are still thriving and in existence. come to find out, he's actually an alien, right? And the like sort of circular adornments on his head, who knows what they are, is not that kind of like, you know, clay adornment, but something else. And I was like, I love the look of this. I don't like the way that simply being a person of color marks you as other and alien, you know? Like, I don't love it.
Yeah.
We see this in the way that, like, fantastic fiction, fantastic media will have people who are designated as, like, savage or very martial, and they'll have something akin to locks. And it's like, you don't get to use the cultural markers of existing people as a way to connote alien identity. It's such a small thing, and it didn't stick with me for a long time, but I was just like, yo, you got this beautiful black man on screen, you know, and I love that, like, he looked cool. I'm not gonna lie, like, he looked cool, but I was just like, I don't know. I wish there had been something else, and I do think it's something that perhaps, like, black or African viewers might pick up on and think. I don't know that white viewers might pick up on it in the same way. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think Gersha Phillips is the hair and makeup person and costuming person for Picard in the same way that she is for Discovery. And she's a black woman. And so I don't want to distract from it because, you know, like it's legitimate. It's wonderful to take existing aesthetics and be inspired by them and, you know, use them in new forms of art. So yeah, just thinking it through. But that's the only report I got for the week.
There, that's an interesting thing too to think about in terms of. So I'm going to put aside that Star Trek is supposed to be a utopian space, mm-hmm. Because it's an interesting question to talk about cultural appropriation. So if aliens are living on Earth and they like adopt the visual styles of different cultures on Earth, right. Like theoretically there's no power imbalance or dynamics to make cultural appropriation what it is, but like that I've never really thought about that. So like if we that's not what's happening here, it's just something right. that I'm ad-libbing on the fly that I think is kind of an interesting thing. Like is there an interesting conversation to be had about how we do that and like the actual cultural appropriation of aliens and vice versa in terms of power dynamics and what that means. But we often use cultural, like we only use cultural signifiers that we have in our society now to denote otherness, which is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, just think about the ways that Star Trek has used like, you know, this kind of pan-Asian, you
totally.
Know, aesthetic, you know, to denote like alien culture.
And Star Trek has always been bad about the monoculture bullshit too, right?
Yeah.
Which is a huge piece of this. So I struggle a little bit with like that person had to be an alien because it needed to be Star Trek-y, right? Like if it was just too human, like if it was too human looking people, it just would be like, oh, look at all these human looking people. Right. And like, and it was a part of showing her character development. What bothered me was that, they killed ostensibly a black dude as the very first person who dies on the show. Right. Like it's literally, that is a trope, like black guy dies first. And so I struggle because I like that character. And I think that it, like, I like that she's not dating a random white dude, you know, blah, 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 what have you. But the, so this isn't to discount anything you're saying. I just, like, why that just, it just, that it was a disappointing series of choices that were made.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, and we're both saying, we both enjoyed this episode. We are excited for what's to come. But there were a couple of notes.
You wouldn't listen to us if we didn't have a couple of notes.
It's okay to point those things out.
Yeah. All right.
Before we wrap up and give our ratings for this episode, Anita, I do want to point out that the director of this episode and the co-producer of this series is an amazing director named Hanalei Culpepper. She is the first woman to launch a new Star Trek property in the show's, I think, 53, 54-year history. She is a black woman. Just want to shout out Hanalei Culpepper. You did an amazing job. I look forward to seeing the rest of your work. on this series. And I do think you can, the fact that she is a Black woman, it's okay to point those things out and not, you know, like it is a benefit. It is a pro. It is something we should celebrate. Like, you want someone to bring that Black woman's eye to your property. It's not something that you should try to hide. Like, oh, we want her to make something that's exactly like what the white dudes who have done this will create. So
it's kind of like, yeah, absolutely. It reminds me a little bit of our discussion around The Mandalorian and how, like, even though, like, you could feel the difference. I'm totally blanking on her name, but you know, the first female director of a Star Wars show, Star Wars, you could feel the difference in how she viewed and presented that episode. And we, like, we talked about it on the first podcast we did about The Mandalorian on Feminist Frequency Radio. You could feel the difference between, like, the male directors and her. And it was the same script, right? It's the same story. It's the same everything. But there's certain ways that different perspectives who are not often given the opportunity to shape media will look at things different, will present them different, will edit them different, will light them different, will hold on certain shots, will give more emotional gravitas to certain scenes. Like, there's so many little details that change the tone, and why I think it's so wonderful that we are given that ultimately, like, there is more space being given to different folks' perspectives in the Star Trek universe, which is supposed to be what Star Trek is about, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you know, I'm here for that.
So here for it. I'm also here for the return of Bruce Maddox. I'll talk about that with Star Trek nerds on Twitter. Anyway, Anita, let's wrap it up by giving our respective ratings for this episode.
How are we? What's our rating scale?
Oh God, let's come up with one. What's appropriate for Picard?
Earl Grey's? Teas? Teacups, teas. How many hot teas?
How about Earl Grey tea, and it's either cold, lukewarm, or hot?
Fuck yeah.
Yes.
Well, we might have to enter in decaf now because that
oh, right, right.
But
he's
let's
an
just
old
go.
Man. He cold, can't take too much caffeine.
Yeah, fair. You know, cold, lukewarm, hot. All right, where do you land?
I was gonna say lukewarm, like perfect drinking temperature. So between warm and too hot. But then that last shot when we see that the Romulan Reclamation Center is the Borg cube, lava, sun heat, red dwarf, hot, hot, hot.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to give it like hot, 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 only because yes, there are problems with it. There are things, right? It's not a perfect piece of television. Nothing is, but it's not even close. But it made me so happy. So my rating is purely on like the excitement and joy and interest and engagement that this gave me. And because I do think it's going somewhere good. I think that it was a pretty solid, it packed in so much in the first episode. Like, I am fucking here for this show.
Oh my God, so here for it. And I cannot wait to talk about it with you and with the special guests that we have coming up. Listeners, old-time listeners, newbie listeners, you're gonna fucking love this. Also, it's gonna relieve the burden of listening to just me and Anita. Week on week. All right, so that's it for this episode. Please join us next time as we come back to discuss episodes 2 and 3. This season, we're gonna have a bunch of special guests, as we mentioned. Oh my God, like people that you've heard before on Feminist Frequency Radio or our Star Trek Discovery podcast, new people, they are going to be falling out of the Jeffries tube like tribbles. We got so many special guests. Oh, so good. All right. If you like this show, if you like Feminist Frequency Radio, our main podcast, please help us keep making these forays into pop culture. Head over to patreon.com/femfreak to become a show backer and get access to exclusive perks, y'all. You know what else would be great? I'm gonna tell you what would be great. Go rate and review this show so that it's easier for other folks to find it. Special thanks to Alex Cox for hooking Anita up with studio space in Chicago. Anita is away from LA, so I'm holding it down at her place. She's in Chicago, living that, you know, jet setter lifestyle, whatever, humble brag. But yeah, thanks to Alex Cox for helping us hook up this episode for y'all. Also, big thanks go out to our producer, Rob Pera, who's got a mountain of coughing and sneezing to erase. So by the time y'all hear this, it's going to sound crystal clear. Also, shout out to Carrie Stimson for technical support. Our art is by the fabulous Ray Aviar. Please give it up for her. We will see y'all next time.
Bye.
Bye.